Hi, I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Early voting in Maryland continues until 8 o'clock tonight. So far, about 70% more Marylanders have voted early this time compared to 2012, and there are still more than 3 million Maryland voters who are eligible to cast their ballots on Election Day, Tuesday. The debut of our new voting system last April was bumpy, especially in Baltimore, where reports of missing and miscounted ballots led the State Board of Elections to decertify the initial results. Today, we'll examine how Maryland's new voting system is meeting the challenges the second time out. We'll talk with officials from the state and city boards of elections and an expert in Maryland's voting history who trains election judges. Midday on voting, right after these headlines. And welcome, everybody, to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us, especially if you're a Cubs fan. Congratulations. If you're one of the 726,000 people in Maryland who have already voted, well, bravo to you. Nationwide, 26 million voters have cast their ballots so far, more than twice the number who did so in the last presidential election. Today, a conversation about the experience of voting in Maryland that those of us who are going to vote Tuesday can expect. In last April's primary, particularly in Baltimore, there were multiple problems at several different polling places. After the results of the election were certified, State Election Administrator Linda Lamone took the extraordinary step of decertifying those results. She undertook a precinct-level investigation of possible irregularities. News reports noted that there were questions about provisional ballots not being counted and discrepancies between the number of people who checked in at polling locations and the number of people who actually voted. In that context, several races in Baltimore City were close. The Democratic nominee for mayor, Senator Catherine Pugh, was eventually declared the winner over second-place finisher, former Mayor Sheila Dixon, but by a pretty slim margin of less than 2,500 votes. A few city council primary races were decided by far fewer votes than that. In an election year where the Republican presidential candidate has stated irresponsibly and without evidence that the election is rigged, it's troubling that anything would happen in the course of the voting process to raise doubts about its integrity. I'm joined this afternoon by the man who has been in charge of elections in Baltimore City for 10 years. Armstead Jones came under criticism, including calls for him to resign after problems at the polls surfaced last spring. He joins me here in the studio. Mr. Jones, thanks for your time, sir.
Good afternoon.
Nikki Charlson is the Deputy State Administrator for Election. She joins us on the phone from her office in Annapolis. Ms. Charlson, welcome to Midday.
Thank you for having me.
And John Willis is here as well. He's the former Maryland Secretary of State and the Executive in Residence at the University of Baltimore School of Public and International Affairs. He has studied the history of Maryland elections, and he has trained election judges. Mr. Willis, welcome back to the show.
It's good to be with you.
We'd like to hear from you about your experience, either as an early voter this past week or your experience voting in last spring's primary. Our telephone number, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle at Midday Tom Hall. Ms. Charlson, let me start with you. For folks who haven't used the new system, this is a system that was introduced for the first time in the primary in April. Can you describe what they will find if they decide to early vote today or if they vote on Tuesday when the polls open?
Sure. Maryland has moved to a paper-based voting system. So voters will be issued, most voters are going to vote and mark their ballot by hand. So when they go in to vote, whether it's today on the last day of early voting or next Tuesday, they'll be issued a paper ballot that has ovals next to each candidate and selection. And the voter just fills in the oval that corresponds to his or her choice, reviews the ballot, and then walks it to a scanner. There'll be at least one scanner in every precinct, and feeds it through. And then when that ballot's going through, it's being tabulated, and it falls into a secure and locked bin.
Do voters need to bring an ID to the polls?
Most voters do not. The check-in process, the conversation between the voter and the election judge will provide the information that the election judge needs to confirm the identity. There are some voters who, perhaps first-time voters, who haven't satisfied the ID requirements during the registration process may need to provide that ID. But those voters are specially noted in the poll books, the tablet devices that we use to check in voters in Maryland, and the judges know who to ask for ID from and who doesn't. But most people don't need to show ID. They'll just need to answer a series of questions when they check in.
So they don't need to bring a proof of residency, you know, a utility bill or something like that?
Well, that information and that documentation is required if the voter today wants to either register to vote and vote or change an address. So the General Assembly passed a couple years ago what we call same-day registration and same-day address change during early voting. So today's the last day for an individual who is not yet registered to vote but wants to participate, or a voter who's already registered but hasn't updated his or her new address. That can happen at any early voting center in the county where they now live, and they do have to bring proof of residency for that process.
Okay, so you can register today. You cannot register at the polls on Tuesday.
That's correct.
Talk about provisional ballots. We heard a lot about them in the primary last April. What is a provisional ballot, and under what circumstance would a voter cast a provisional ballot?
A provisional ballot is a fail-safe way of making sure that nobody gets turned away from the polls. There's an application process. The voter votes a paper ballot, and that ballot is returned to the election office for review and processing after the election. We continue to count votes for several days, for a couple weeks after Election Day. So in Maryland, the election is not over on Tuesday. We have many more days of counting ballots, and the provisionals are reviewed later. And if there's a clerical error, then that the record gets straightened out and the ballot's counted. In a presidential general, generally the most common reason why somebody is issued a provisional ballot is because they're not registered to vote, or they have moved and haven't updated their address. So for somebody who has an address change, that address change gets processed with the provisional, and that provisional ballot gets counted.
Nikki Charlson is the Deputy State Administrator for Elections in Annapolis. John Willis, let me ask you, you train judges both for the primaries and for this coming election on Tuesday and the early voting that's taking place now. There were a number of hiccups last time. What do you attribute those hiccups?
Well, the biggest issue is system change. Whenever you change a system, experience will show. I mean, I produce a newsletter that goes all around the world, literally. It's called Election Administration Reports. And every jurisdiction that undertakes system change generally will encounter some problem in the first couple of elections before they did it.
And there, so we used to do touchscreen voting. Now we're doing paper ballots and scanning them.
Correct.
So that's the system change.
In five jurisdictions in Maryland, over 40% of the voters had never used that system. In Montgomery, Prince George's County, Baltimore City, Allegheny, and Dorchester County, they had never used an optical scan-based system. And so you not only had your election judges, your poll workers who were not familiar with the system, but the voters themselves. And it was quite a mystery because some of the problems involved provisional ballots, but that process really hadn't changed. The only thing that was new is the ballot scanner, which had never, ever in the history of Baltimore been in a Baltimore City polling place, and a notion of a paper ballot, which we haven't used in Baltimore City since the 1930s. So there was unfamiliarity, there was a lack of clarity, there was some confusion about what to do. I've talked to many voters about their experiences in April. And so a lot of steps have been taken to correct the procedures and to add additional training for poll workers, and also, I think, increased awareness, both from the state and local level.
John Willis is the former Maryland Secretary of State and the Executive in Residence at the University of Baltimore School of Public and International Affairs. He studies the history of Maryland elections and trains election judges. Mr. Jones, you're in charge of elections here in Baltimore, and there were a number of problems that gave many people reason for pause. One of the biggest ones was the fact that so many election judges who had been trained by people like Mr. Willis didn't show up on Election Day in April. How's that problem being addressed for next Tuesday?
Well, of course, we have advertised. We've put the word out of needing judges all the way up until we still have one class coming up on this coming Saturday, because the need of judges is always a hard task to get to where you need to be. When the primary, we had trained almost 2,500 judges, and they were scheduled to be in the polling place. And of course, election day, we had less than 1,900 to show up. This is a major.
So what will be different this time? How are you going to assure that that doesn't happen again?
Well, this time we've recruited close to 3,500 judges and that have been trained. So we have fulfilled that number to staff all of the precincts. And of course, it's not something, nothing in the law or anything that we can do to make these folks show. All I can do is recruit them, and I've recruited 3,500.
And they are not volunteering for these positions. They are paid. What are they compensated?
They are compensated. A regular judge receives $165, and a chief judge receives $225, and they get $20 for training.
And they are there for from 7 in the morning, or before 7 to
5:30.
5:30 in the morning until
9:30, 10 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm. Are you confident that because you have recruited so many more people this time, that you'll get? So it sounds like you are expecting a certain percentage of these folks who have submitted to the training, you've taken the time and expense to train them, aren't going to show up.
Well, that's been the norm since I've been there, before I became director and even when I served on the board. You can always look for at least 10% of them to call in, not show up.
Is the fact that the problems that folks encountered with the scanners and with the new system, is that related to the way they were trained, to the efficacy of their training the last time? I mean, there were a number of problems. Polls opened late because the election judges didn't quite have their act together getting the machines ready, et cetera. What's different about the training this time than in April?
Well, I think the training, in my opinion, and according to the survey done by the judges at that time of training in the primary, showed that the training was satisfactory and above. I think the newness of the system, scared or made people a little frightful of the system once they actually did.
You're talking about the judges or the voters?
The judges, mm-hmm. Once they appeared in the precinct. And, of course, with the no-show of judges, if there were five or six individuals assigned to that precinct and you only had two or three, that sort of caused a late opening because of maybe lack of knowledge of some of these judges. We have to remember that the requirement for hiring judges is that you have to be a registered voter in Maryland. And there's no other requirements.
Can registered voters from outside the jurisdiction of the city be judges in the city?
Yes.
I just wanted to impress upon the audience that this is a very large, complex enterprise. I mean, you have 296 precincts in Baltimore City, and you have statewide a little less than 2,000 precincts. There'll be over 20,000 citizen voters who are actually people manning the precincts. So it is a very large enterprise. And there are anecdotal evidence of a late opening here, late opening there. But when you really examine the data, and I've looked at it down to the precinct level, for example, with the provisional ballot problem, we know 72% of the problem occurred in 31 precincts out of 296. So that nobody should have the impression that every precinct had every problem. That's far from what happened. And with regard to provisional ballots that were subsequently found and then counted, they were not counted. They were found where they shouldn't have been, in the warehouse, as opposed to being brought down to the board on election night. But there were that affected only 18 precincts out of 296. So there were 276 precincts, 278 precincts that did what they were supposed to do. So.
Well, when we come back, I want to talk to Ms. Charlson in particular about the first 100% statewide post-election audit that's going to occur after this election. We are going to take a little bit of a break. Nikki Charlson is on the phone with us from Annapolis. She's the Deputy State Administrator for Elections in Annapolis. Armstead Jones is the Director of the Baltimore City Elections Board. John Willis, former Maryland Secretary of State and the Executive in Residence at the University of Baltimore School of Public and International Affairs. We will have more on voting in Maryland, including your calls. You can give us a buzz at 410-662-8780. You can drop us a tweet at Midday Tom Hall or drop us an email, midday@wipr.org. Glad you're with us. Stick around. Welcome back. It's Midday on 88.1. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. By the way, coming up later today, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will ride her horse-drawn coach made out of a pumpkin right in here to Studio A. She's going to tell us about the touring production of Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella at the Hippodrome Theater in Baltimore. And coming up tomorrow, the Midday Movie Mayhem. Our intrepid movie mavens, Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival and Ann Hornaday, the film critic for The Washington Post, will join me to talk about what's in and what's on the way into theaters across this great land of ours. We look forward to hearing from you about some of your favorite flicks that you may have seen recently. That's tomorrow on Midday. Today, we're talking about voting with Nikki Charlson, the Deputy State Administrator for Elections, who joins us on the phone from Annapolis. John Willis, the author and former Secretary of State who's been training election judges during this cycle, and Armstead Jones, the Director of the Baltimore City Elections Board. Let us know what you think of the new voting system where we fill out paper ballots and scan them into a machine for the first time. Our number, 410-662-8780, our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. Let me go to the phones. Shay in North Baltimore, thanks for calling Midday. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Shay.
I wanted to tell you about my experience last week voting. It was, I'm a 56-year-old white woman, and I did have the judges request my identification, my driver's license, which I had no problem with because I had it. The judges were very, very helpful. They, you know, I had met had a paper ballot, and well, I don't know if I ever had one, but you know, they told me just what to do, how to do it, not to go out of the lines, but and they made it a very, very pleasurable experience. It was very exciting.
Great. Well, Shay, thanks for your call. Nikki Charlson, Shay was asked for an ID. Is that what's your reaction to that?
Well, as I said earlier, most voters don't have to show ID. The information that they provide when they check in to vote, it can be just a dialogue between the election judge and the voter. I don't know whether the caller was flagged to show ID because she hadn't provided it before. We'd need to look into that some more. If you wanted to provide her full name, we could look into that after the show.
All right. Talk to me about the this audit that's going to take place after Election Day. This is the first time that Maryland has entered into this arrangement. What's it going to encompass, and why are we doing it?
Well, I think first it's important to understand that we have an extensive post-election audit program here. We review various aspects of the election that we've identified as being critical for people to have confidence in the election. So we're with the new voting system, we needed to think about, okay, so how do we audit the accuracy of the voting system now that we have paper ballots? And so during the primary, we tried a couple different options. We did a pilot in two counties and piloted hand-counting ballot images and using an automated software to retabulate the ballots. One of the new features of this voting system is that when you scan your ballot in, in addition to tabulating it, it is taking a digital image of each ballot. So at the end of the day, we have the paper ballots, and we also have a digital image of every single ballot. So that gives us more options as to how we can verify the accuracy of the count. And because handling paper and handling paper in this very short window of time from Election Day until the local boards of election certify the election, we decided that using the ballot images minimizes human error and eliminates chain of custody issues. It's it's important to do this, we believe, in this short period of time so that when the local board certify, they have confidence in the information and the results that they're signing. So after our pilot in the primary, we recommended using this software where they retabulate 100% of all of the ballot images. They create a set of results. We then provide them with the results from our system, and this company compares their results to our results. So we can, at a ballot-to-ballot level, compare how whether the primary voting system counted accurately.
And are you doing that because there were so many problems, not only in Baltimore City, but in several other jurisdictions last April?
No, we had planned to do this before the primary. We just believe it's important to have a way to verify the accuracy of the voting system, and we just tried a couple different ways in the primary and found that based on the time we have to do this in and the logistics with paper when we have a mirror image electronically and the feedback that we received from the local boards and our auditing team by doing things manually, the manual verification in the primary validated the accuracy of the voting system. There's no question about it. But it was time-consuming. We made mistakes. And considering the workload of the local boards of elections over the next 2 weeks, adding a manual retabulation of ballots or ballot images in that time means it's probably not going to be finished by the time they certify the election, and we thought that was important. So the ballot images provide us with a way to do this very quickly. We like the 100% audit of the ballots instead of a small subset. And so it really it had nothing to do with anything that happened in the primary. We were already on this path, and this is the solution that we want to try statewide in the general.
Okay, Mr. Jones, Ms. Charlson mentioned chain of custody. In the April primary, there were at least 8 data files containing votes that were missing for a day. How did that happen, and can you assure the voters that that's not going to happen again?
Yeah, well, let me just first say they're not missing. They were not missing. At night when the judges close out at their precincts, they were left in the equipment. And the practice has always been, if that occurs, that the next morning we send out and get them by our staff. So we have done some things to reassure that that's done. Before the judges leave the precinct, they will be accounted for and they will not be able to leave until they have all 5 of them. If it's 5 in that precinct.
John Willis, before we go back to the phones, here's an email from Michelle who says, why have the touch screens been replaced with paper ballots? Is this, in fact, a more secure method? Is it easier to audit them under these circumstances? And do you expect to see the touch screens ever coming back?
Well, there's a lot in that question. One is the state board and the local boards are just following the laws adopted by the Maryland General Assembly. It was a decision of the Maryland General Assembly to move to a paper-based verified system in 2007. It was delayed because of budget reasons for a number of budget cycles. There's constant innovation in elections, and I would expect that in the future, you'll have, in fact, we have it now. We have a ballot marking device now. Any voter can use what's called a ballot marking device, which is available in every precinct, not just for people with disabilities, but for any voter, which is a touchscreen interface, which then marks a person's ballot for them. It's a very nice compromise, and there are other ballot marking devices I expect we might see in future election
but
cycles.
But would you classify the use of a paper ballot as an advance in technology? It seems on its face it's sort of kicking it old school a little
bit. No, I wouldn't.
Is it more secure?
The security, there's different types of security. There's physical security of the equipment and of the ballots. There's technological security. There's human security. It's ultimately the human beings that run whatever your system that provide the highest level of security. And voters should be confident, as I said earlier, over 20,000 election judges will be manning the polls. They are citizen voters, Republican and Democrats and independents and unaffiliated and Green Party members. So citizens actually run the elections in America, and we shouldn't really worry about any broad-based kind of conspiracy or rigging because the citizens are running the election.
All right, John Willis, this is former Maryland Secretary of State. Nikki Charlson's on the phone with us from Annapolis. She is the Deputy State Administrator for Elections in Annapolis. Armstead Jones is here in the studio. He's the Director of the Baltimore City Elections Board. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. We're going to go back to the phones. Kevin in Easton, you're on midday. Thanks for your call.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just early voted yesterday, and I just have a quick question about. So basically, I had two pieces of paper, one that had my voter registration ID on it, and one was the ballot. This may be obvious to you guys, but I wasn't sure, how do those two get linked? How is my voter registration ID linked with that ballot, that piece of paper?
Ms. Charlson, what do you think?
They're not linked. The piece of paper that you sign is confirmation that you checked in to vote. And once you scan your ballot into the scanner, that card just goes in an envelope on the back of the scanner. So it's not in any way connected to your ballot. The reason that it's placed in an envelope or a bag on the scanner is that at the end of the day, the election judges will take the number of ballots that were scanned and compare it to the number of those check-in slips that are in the envelope as part of their regular reconciliation.
Now, those numbers were often at odds with each other, John Willis, the last time. I mean, there was a discrepancy in several polling places between the number of check-ins and the number of votes cast. I understand that that's not necessarily too unusual.
No, it's not. The check-in piece of paper that we're talking about in election parlance vernacular is called a voter authority card. It's a permission for the voter to vote. And those voter authority cards are supposed to be maintained so that you know at the end of the day, how many people checked in on your poll book. You have a count there. You have a count at the scanner of how many ballots were actually scanned. And you have, did I have the right number of voter authority cards? And what happened in some precincts, again, in some precincts, were the number of voter authority cards didn't match. There's a number of reasons for that. Often there are voters who don't complete the process. They may check in, but they don't actually finish. Something happens. We've had all kinds of things. People get sick. They get an emergency call. They get all kinds of things.
So you're not astonished by that?
I'm not astonished. The magnitude of what happened with regard to that issue that you're raising was not unusual for a large urban jurisdiction.
Mr. Jones, there were letters sent to released felons who had been incarcerated, but who, of course, according to the legislature, were allowed to vote in this election, and they got letters from the election board saying that they may not be able to vote. How did that happen, and will that continue to happen?
Well, of course, we were in the middle of a transition March 10th. The letters generated through our voter system, and of course, a letter was sent from the state to replace that and to do it manually. We were in touch with the state. We worked on this situation. Once we found out, we contacted all of those individuals, there were 34 of them, and resolved the issue before the issue even came up either in the media, or came public. And those individuals were told that they could go and vote.
It is very unusual for the State Board of Elections to intervene in any of the jurisdictions. One state election official was quoted in the Baltimore Sun as saying that she was appalled at the condition of the city election warehouse. There seems to be some pretty serious concerns on the part of the State Board of Elections about the way elections are being run in the city. What's your response to that? Are you aware of that? Are you troubled by that? What's going to be different? Can you assure folks that this next Tuesday is going to be a very different situation than the 26th of April?
Well, let me just say this. The warehouse is a massive building with all of the new innovative equipment that's come into our warehouse. The space that we did have with the new system is no more. So it seems to be cluttered. So when things came in election night with the judges bringing supplies that perhaps should have gone downtown, they brought them to the warehouse, and the opposite things were brought downtown. The warehouse has been sort of straightened up to make sure that there's ample room, that things can be separated as they should be. It's very difficult to manage two locations. Most of the larger jurisdictions in this state have one building.
It might be difficult, but it's important that they be managed correctly, is it not?
Well, it is important that it be managed correctly.
And are you confident that it is now being managed correctly? Because evidently it wasn't being managed correctly
before. I would disagree that it was not managed correctly. I believe that the judges brought it things that should have gone downtown.
So is that another training issue?
Well, I don't know about training as much as it is staffing a location. We are very short on staff. We've hired some additional people since then. And, of course, right now we do have a temporary warehouse supervisor there.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Derek in Howard County. Howard County has the highest rate of early voting in the Baltimore metropolitan area. Derek, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. I just had two questions. I missed whether you answered directly as to why the change was made, but my major question was really the review of the ballots with the touch screen at the end of the process. If I remember correctly, you got a kind of prompt at the end to go through it one more time before you submitted the ballot. Here, yes, you're responsible for going through the paper ballot, but there's no prompt. And so that's one. And the second thing is, if you're shaded outside the line, so to speak, how do you know that your ballot has been accepted by the scanner? Is it accepted? Is it rejected? And those were the two things I didn't like about this new process.
Well, thanks for your call. John Willis?
I'll answer part of that, and that is that under the touchscreen method, it is impossible. You have a summary page which allows you to look at your entire ballot on a screen and either make changes. The touchscreen also doesn't allow you to cast more than one vote or the number of votes that you have for that office. So voting for president, you couldn't vote twice. With the scanner that we're using now, if you vote twice for an individual office, you will get notified. And you have an opportunity to have that rejected and brought back to you. However, if you undervote, you fail to vote in an office, you won't get notified. So that is a difference. The caller is right about the difference. With regard to the circles, or if you go outside the oval or what gets counted and what's not, maybe, Nikki, you might want to address that. And that also is one of the advantages, I think, of the audit system that you're putting in place.
Nikki Charlson, what do you think?
So the system is flexible in that you don't have to stay exactly in the oval. You can go a little outside. It doesn't have to be completely filled. The system does recognize marks that are a little less than the oval size or a little bit bigger. If it's too big, as John said, it's going to recognize it potentially as you've tried to vote for too many candidates in that contest. And when you slide your ballot in, it's going to alert you that you voted for more candidates than allowed and allow the ballot to be returned to be fixed.
Go ahead. Let me have you finish up real quick. We're running out of time.
Okay. The comment about the prompt is something that we are hearing from voters, that the summary page, there is not an equivalent summary page on this system. It really is to review your ballot. The machine does, as we've talked about, reject or give the voter an opportunity to get the ballot back if it sees an error. But once that thank you for voting message comes up on the screen of the scanner, that means your ballot's been tabulated and the counter has gone up by one.
We have a tweet from Jim Considine, who identifies himself as an election judge. Mr. Jones, he asks, what is being done in case vigilante poll watchers are interfering with voting? Remember, they are being told to show up and observe by Donald Trump and even some local candidates.
Well, first of all, any person that's in the polling place should have a challengers or watch document to show the chief judges the reason why they're in there. If anyone else is in the polling place or within the electioneering area, if they have been told and asked to move from that area and they refuse, they are instructed to dial 911.
Doug from Reservoir Hill, we're going to take your call real quick as we finish up. You have a similar question.
I'm the previous election judge, and I volunteered this year. I noticed in the seminars that the electioneering has changed, that you can, before you used to have to, if you had a candidate's T-shirt on, you had to turn inside out, hats, et cetera, badges. Has that was changed, hasn't it, and why was it changed?
John Willis, you're saying no.
No, that hasn't changed. There's a difference, however, between the voter. A voter can wear a T-shirt and saying vote for candidate A, but nobody else, not a campaign worker, not a volunteer, not a election judge, certainly not anybody else that would come into the precinct. But the voter themselves can wear the hat of their favorite candidate, but they can't electioneer once they get inside the precinct, and as soon as they voted, they have to leave.
I want to sneak in one more quick question for Nikki Charleston. This is an email from Therese, who says, I've always been curious as to how we verify if someone is even a citizen when they register to vote. Please help me understand how citizenry is confirmed. Real quick, Nikki Charleston, what do you think?
Well, first, every voter signs an oath stating that he or she is not a citizen. We do receive information from jury commissioners when people decline to serve as a juror and state it's because they're not a citizen, that information is forwarded to us. And MVA does track for recent driver's license issued, they do track whether somebody is a permanent resident or a temporary resident. And that information is shared with us as we prepare for same-day registration and try to identify the universe of individuals who appear eligible but aren't registered.
Nikki Charleston is the Deputy State Administrator for Elections in Annapolis. John Willis is the former Maryland Secretary of State and an executive in residence at the University of Baltimore School of Public and International Affairs. Armstead Jones is the Director of the Baltimore City Elections Board. Thanks to all of you. I appreciate it, and good luck on Tuesday.
Thank you.
Our website, WYPR.org/midday, has links to information about early voting locations. You've got about 7 hours left to vote early if you'd like. If you don't vote today, polls open at 7 o'clock Tuesday morning. For the first time in U.S. history, 200 million people are registered to vote. Let's just hope that many, many, many of them exercise that cherished right. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stick around. Lots more coming up.